My name is Aaron Moss, and this is the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour, presented by Head Speaks. This is an hour-long podcast where we'll talk about the Will Payton Starman comic and the Mark Shaw Manhunter comic from the late 80s, early 90s. We'll talk about every appearance of these two great characters. If you've never read them or haven't read them in a while, this may be a good time to explore these issues. Now, let's get started with our first comic.
And welcome back to the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. This is episode 14. I am your host, as normal, Aaron Brotherhead Moss. My friends call me Head. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. If you're returning, thank you for coming back. I know my episodes haven't been as regular as I like them. I'm working on getting that fixed. I keep saying that. I keep doing it. But anyways, let's quit with that nonsense and move on to the actual episode. This month, we're looking at Manhunter number 13 and Starman number 10. First up on the docket, we are looking at Manhunter number 13. As I talked about, I think last month, I'm going to start doing these in the order they were released during the month. Again, I'm looking at the books that were released in March, and I'm looking at as they were released. So this one was released again, as I said, Manhunter number 13. Cover date was May of 1989, but the on-sale date was March the 14th of 1989. This was $1. The editor was Barbara Kiesel, or Kessel. The title of this was called Trackdown. It was written by Kim Yell, penciled by John Koch. Sorry about that, John. How do you pronounce your last name? Inker Pablo Marcos. Letter, Albert Tobias de Guzman. The colorist, as usual, was Juliana Freder. And the cover was done by Doug Rice. And I think this is Kim's first tackle on this title alone. Again, Kim Yell was John Ottinger's wife. My understanding, I guess she's passed. But again, she was a great writer. And she also helped create one of the great characters, Oracle, over in Suicide Squad. Speaking of Oracle and Suicide Squad, these credits I just gave and this information I'm about to read off to you came from, as usual, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, a great site. And from Mike's, he lets us know that Oracle, who appears in this episode, who I just mentioned, her first appearance was in Suicide Squad number 23. And her last appearance before she appeared in this issue was Suicide Squad 26. Suicide Squad 23 was released last week. Actually, in reality, I think I got right behind on that one, so I think it was probably just a couple days ago. If things work out right and this comes out on time. But I just talked about Oracle over in the Suicide Squad first showing up in episode 34 of Task Force X. She wasn't very much of an appearance there, but we did get our first appearance, so definitely check that out. Moving on to this story. Again, this is from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Mark Shaw checks the latest outstanding warrants. He then begins looking for several wanted criminals, including Mirage. After a day of searching for clues, Mark attends the museum benefit with his sister. The Catman strikes at an exhibit, forcing Mark to go into action as Manhunter. When Catman tries to get away, he finds out that his car is being towed. Mark had reported the car to the police. With his getaway vehicle disabled, the Catman is captured by Manhunter. And now for the actual comments on the earth, my thoughts on this story. And actually, while I'm thinking about it, before I actually start my actual thoughts on this, again, as I talked about last episode, we've reached the midway point of the Manhunter series. Episode 13 is the back half of the series. So we got 12 more, actually, after this one. Should be 11 more issues to go to Manhunter. I'm still debating what I'm going to do with the show after that, whether it's just going to be Starman for a while or if I'm going to look at the later Manhunter series. Wasn't a big fan of it because I really enjoyed Mark. I don't know. We'll have to see. But again, the story starts out, you know, we got our title, Manhunter. We get Manhunter in a suit with his mask on, the baton in his hand, standing in front of behind a jade cat. And lo and behold, there's a cat in the issue, so we either have to have Catwoman or Catman. And here's Catman crashing behind him. Glass windows breaking, it looks like. Or maybe that's a display case. I'm not sure. It's got to be the display case breaking. Because Catman's leaping up behind Manhunter, and the angle he's at, he couldn't be leaping through a window. So it must be the display case. I'm not sure how the case got broken here. I'm thinking way too much into it. It's just a cover, but again, it's a nice cover. It says stalked by the Catman. Catman was, if I'm not mistaken, a second-rate Batman villain at this point. He would show up here and there in the DC Universe. Later on, I think Gil Simone would do more with him. I think it was Gil Simone in the Secret Six. Hoover was all into the Secret Six, did more with him there. They made a little bit more of a player, a little bigger guy, a little bigger character. But at this point, he was just a second-tier, maybe third-tier Batman. Yeah, I think it was a Batman villain. That would show up, you know, get his butt kicked by their heroes here and there. A good cover. Not a classic one. Not what I think about when I think of Manhunter. But it's a good cover. I enjoy it. Moving on to the story itself. We start out with Mark Shaw doing some ninjutsu type. Again, I'm not sure what exactly he's doing. Taekwondo or something. With some guy. And as he's fighting, a camera gets right next to his face, which gets him sidetracked. And allows his opponent to take him down. And then we find out there's a reporter there that's trying to interview him, which caused him distraction. Again, I love Kim Yell's work. Her and John Oster did some great work on here and over on the Suicide Squad, which I talk about religiously. But I think, and again, this may just be an art choice, or I don't know. The camera seems a little too close for them to be doing some, these two guys doing some one-on-one fighting. But again, some cameramen, I guess, are paid extra for the, you know, getting that close to confrontations and fighting. So, but again, so Mark's kind of upset that he got knocked down by his sensei, by this guy who's trying to interview him. And so he pulls him aside, says, the reporter says, he's like, we've got to talk. He excuses himself to his sensei, and his sensei's like, a true warrior sees what is not there, so when it appears, he has already made the counter move. We have some work to do, Mark. Until next class. Mark throws the mic back at the guy and storms off, says, I'd shower alone. I'll see you outside, Howie. And the reporter, whose name they mentioned the previous page, is Howard Baxter. He's like, that's Howard. So again, he's a little pet out that Mark kind of is dismissing him. But again, Mark's upset that he caused him to get knocked down. So I guess they're kind of even. And so the two men go outside and talk a little bit, and Howard's trying to get an interview with Mark Shaw, trying to get him on his TV show. And Mark wants nothing to do with Howard or his TV show. And he tells me, you better keep that camera away from me, Foot, which I can't believe he's his cameraman. What about the connection between you and Paul Kirk? The cameraman's like, you blew it, Howie. That's Howard. And I've known people like that that had a nickname or like, you know, a shortening of the name, whatever, when they were younger, when they got older, in quotes, they try to frown away, move away from that and try to be, use their full name to be more adultish, more respectable. In fact, there was this one guy I grew up with. He was younger than I am. My mom was friends with his mom. His name was Jesse, but everyone called him Boo. So I knew him for years as Boo. Then I didn't see him for a while. And the next time I saw him, you know, I referred to him as Boo because that's how I knew him as. That was his nickname. And he, you know, it's Jesse. It's no longer Boo. Shut up. You're always going to be Boo to me. Just like my friend Billy, the guy I grew up with. His nickname was Bob. And he got to the point where he was too mature, too old to be called Bob. He just wanted to be Billy. Heck with you, man. You're always going to be Bob, all right? Own up to it. But back to the actual story. So Mark, again, he goes off and he heads to the police headquarters that I talked about in the synopsis to... Again, he's a bounty hunter, so he's doing what bounty hunters do. And he looks at police records. And we see him looking at Catman, who's on the cover, Sportsmaster, Cannon and Saber, Mirage. Cannon and Saber, if I'm not mistaken, at some point showed up over in the Vigilante series. That was before this series. Because Vigilante was over by now. But that's where I know Cannon and Saber from, was the Vigilante series. Sportsmaster, I want to say he was like an old JSA villain or something. And Mirage, I'm not as familiar with, at least this version of Mirage. And then we get, his name's Mark Phelps, he's the new warrant officer, letting him know that I guess there's a warrant poster on there for Mr. 104 and the Thinker, and he tells him not to worry about that. They're dead. You'd know more about that if you listen to my Task Force X podcast. I talk about, and that's been several months ago that they died. They died in the Suicide Squad Doom Patrol crossover back in episode 21 of Task Force X, or me and my special guest host, Mike Garvey from Down Under, the Waiting for Doom podcast, we talked about that Doom Patrol Suicide Squad crossover. Because again, Paul Garvey and Mike Garvey and his buddy Paul Hicks are big Doom Patrol fans. So if you want to hear about how Mr. 104 and the Thinker died, definitely check out my Task Force X podcast. That one's been quite a while back. It was episode 21, so I'm on 34, and I haven't been quite so monthly. So anyways, back to the story at hand. Mark introduces himself, like I said, to Mark Phelps, the new warrant officer. And yeah, Mark knows who he is. Hey, Manhunter, I've been keeping my eye out for you. Wanted to meet you. He's like, that's a switch around here. Oh, not everyone shares Lieutenant Best's view about you. We see it, us cops are barely holding our own on the street. Skip tracing Bond bounty jumpers, metahuman, criminals. Someone's got to bring them in. So as you realize that the metahumans that are on skip their bail, someone needs to do it. Might as well be Mark instead of Rugger cop getting hurt. And while he's here, he asks about Sylvia Kandry, who we've talked about a couple different episodes, a couple different issues. She was a cop that Mark dealt with and got her demoted to another department for a while. And then we get an outside view of the Bell Rev prison where the Suicide Squad hangs out. I love this shot here. And then here, this is on page 7. We get Mark talking to Flo, and there's a bit of a mix-up here, because here, at least the way I'm looking at it, here Flo looks like a white gal, where she's actually a black woman over in the Suicide Squad. A bit of a mistake, but you know what, I'm not going to hold anyone's feet to the fire on that. I'm assuming it's a colorist error. She's got brown hair, and she's white, where the Suicide Squad, she's a black gal with dark hair. And so she's like, Cannon and Saber are alive? That's news to me. So he's calling Suicide Squad basically to see if they know what Suicide Squad, but Bell Rev, to see if they have any word or know where any of these villains are at so we can get a jump on them. She says there's no Mirage and Catman, there's no record of them being apprehended or being approached by the squad. And again, she tells him, you know, the Waller, Amanda Waller, the gal in charge of Suicide Squad would skin Flo alive if she knows that she was talking to him and tell him this information. But she clues him in that she's got an informant, if you will, that if he logs into a computer, enters a special access code, he can talk to this person that can help him out quite a bit. And so he logs on the computer and he gets a message. Hello, this is Oracle. Who is this? Again, as I talked about, we just met Oracle over on my Task Force X podcast about 3 months ago, time-wise, in the Suicide Squad. But it's out this month on my Task Force X podcast. We get our first introduction to Oracle. So we're going to learn a little more about Oracle here before we learn about it on my other show, I guess. But Mark's, you know, is like, well, this is Mark's son. So he's, I'm assuming this is voice activated instead of just typing, because he's talking. Mark Shaw, who is this? Oracle, pleased to meet Manhunter. Wish to share with you access to privileged records and files? What kind of records? And don't tell me you're doing that out of the kindness of your heart. What do you want from me? And then we get Oracle's side. We don't see who it is yet. They're in shadows, but there's a computer screen in front of the person. And basically Oracle says that she can get in any computer system she wants. All law enforcement related support, backup systems, from the highest to the lowest system. He's like, you're good at dodging my questions, Oracle. The Flo vouched for you, so offer accepted for now. Excellent. Use the access code Flo gave to you. We'll be talking, Mr. Shaw. And again, at this point here on this page 8, we pull back a little bit from the computer monitor. We don't see Oracle yet, but we do see a Batgirl doll sitting next to the monitor. If you're a DC fan from the mid to late 80s and you read a lot of DC books, you may recognize this. It's maybe a clue of who we're dealing with, but we'll get more of that. I don't think we'll get much into it here, but if you want to know more about Oracle, check out my Task Force X podcast, and eventually down the road we'll find out who Oracle is and why she has a Batgirl doll. So Mark had some calls out trying to find what we can find on Mirage and Catman. It says here at the top of page 10, he's saying that, you know, he's got a good lead on Mirage. Maybe he should drop Catman for now and not worry about him. But as he says, you know, the more irons in the fire, the better. Because, again, he gets paid by the criminals he brings in. So the more criminals he can bring in, the more he gets paid. So it's better for him. And as he's like, he's talking to different people. He's talking to his sister about a thing he's got to go to. He got dropped out of Tux. He opens up a box from Southern Cross Salvage.
And Gary and David sent him a little, looks like a silver kangaroo, is like a memento from his time down under. And Mark's all, "Tie me kangaroo down, sport." And I knew that was a reference to a song, so I had to look it up and see, because I wasn't quite sure where it was from. I just knew I heard that somewhere. And yeah, it is a reference. There's a song called "Tie Me Kangaroo Down, Sport" by an Australian singer, Rolf Harris, from 1957. Which began hitting around the world in the 1960s.
Wallabies feed all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Keep me cockatoo cool, curl. Keep me cockatoo cool. Oh, don't go acting a fool, curl. Just keep me cockatoo cool. All together now. Tie me kangaroo down.
I don't remember where I heard this from. I know I've heard this before. And the album cover looks like Scott, I'm assuming it's Rolf Harris, looking at a little kangaroo that actually looks like, I mean, they're kangaroos. I'd say it looks like what Mark got, but maybe not. I mean, it's a kangaroo. And looking on Wikipedia, it lets us know that apparently in the fourth verse, when this was released in 1964, it caused a little bit of controversy because they used the word abo, which is apparently an offensive slang term for Aboriginal Australians. And I guess on his newer releases, he doesn't have that verse. When the show's all done, I'm going to go ahead and play the whole song for it at the very end, just so you can hear it. And this has that deleted fourth verse in it. It's an older version of it, apparently. But yeah, so, like I said, I don't remember where I heard that from, but I've heard that time he came through down sport. So I saw that, I chuckled. But moving on from there, Mark goes to the Daily Star and talks to their friend there. Name's Ray. They make some references to Mark's previous job as a public defender. In fact, I like this. He's like, "Ray, good to see you. Still have the criminal courts beat? Nah, courtroom theatrics just went the same after you left the public defender's office, so I give it up." And so he goes down to investigate a little bit about the Mirage, about the villain he's looking for, and about Catman. Then we find him at the police station inquiring more about his friend. Well, I don't know about friend, but the lady he got in trouble, Sylvia. He finds out, inquires about her. And while he's there, what is this here? He's talking, he's like, read this a little bit. I like this a little bit on page 12. "Thanks. By the way, what's the best way of finding where a police officer is stationed? Try personnel. I know which precinct she's assigned to. They contact her, comment the officer. But I think she may have been disciplined that would mean internal affairs, right? Hey, Mac, who do you think I am? The information service? Look behind you. There's a line. Why don't you shorten by leaving? Internal affairs wouldn't tell you squat anyway." So he's trying to find out more about Sylvia now that he's thinking about her again, and he's getting rebuked at every turn, so. And then the next page here on the top of page 13, I like this here. We got Mark's suit. He's got a suit plus his Manhunter mask. And baton laying on his bed, and he's slowly getting ready, and he says he's going to go and take the mask and the baton, because he says, "Well, technically I'm off duty, but taking the baton and mask won't hurt." Which we'll find out a little bit. No, it won't. And then we get to the museum, where he meets up with his sister, and again, to borrow a page from my buddy Shag's book, she's hot. And as he's going in, we see a car. We get a last page of this, or last panel of this page, we get just the car itself, and the license plate says Gato 1. G-A-T-O 1. Our Spanish-speaking friends would know what that means. And if you're not Spanish-speaking, you probably know what that means. Which will come to play in just a little bit here. And again, he's giving his sister a hard time, because that's what brothers and sisters do. According to Mark, it's in the book, and his sister inquired what book. It's a book that brothers get that tells them to harass their sisters. I think both my boys have it. Moving on to the actual story, though.
Mark gets introduced to people, and as he's looking around, the case with the cat in it shatters, and Catman comes swooping in like Batman on a rope and grabs the cat. And before you know it, Mark puts his mask on. Catman, you're under arrest. The cat has 9 lives. How many does Bast has after 4,000 years? So Catman throws the statue at Mark, which he deflects using his baton and catches it in his hand. Throws it to a security guard as he takes off after Catman. There's a little fight in the elephant exhibit. And Mark takes his torn jacket, wraps it around his sleeve, and uses it to kind of help defend himself. Because, again, he doesn't have his costume. All he has is just his mask and baton. And Catman takes off, and as he gets to the, as I talked about in the synopsis, he gets to the parking garage, finds out that his car is being towed. And in the end, as he goes around, he gets kind of surprised to find out his car is being towed. And Mark comes up and shoots him in the back of the baton, knocks into his car. And the police walk up, hey, buddy, you know, you should really keep up with your parking tickets. And so his sister took him to the hospital. We got him all bandaged up here. He's wrapped up. And the next time we see him, he's back with a sensei. And they're fighting a little bit. They're doing the tussle-tussle, getting ready to tussle-tussle. As the sensei comes at Mark, Mark hears someone say, hello, Mark. So he turns, and again, his sensei knocks him to the ground again. And there we see Sylvia. She's come to talk to Mark. And we find out that she heard him. He was asking about her. So they get a little talk, and she tells him that she got his postcard from Australia, threw it away, but someone fished it out and gave it back to her, so she kept it the second time. And Mark apologizes for he didn't mean to damage her career, of course. Side effect of his superhero, if you will. And so he says, well, I know that. I was the one that made things personal, not you. And he's like, well, I'm sorry. And they have a little talk, and as they're working things out, trying to talk things out, Sylvia mentions about, you know, his nice work with the Catman, learning about his scuffle parking tickets, reporting his car to be moved is brilliant. As we talked about earlier, his license plate, he's like, well, that's what you get if you're a Catman with a vanity plate that spells out gato, or cat, in Spanish. Shinkanoshini? That pinch. And so they talk, and we'll see where things go from there. Again, then it says, next month, the Janus Directive strikes. Janus Directive was a big crossover between Suicide Squad and Checkmate, and Manhunter, Firestorm, a couple other comics got involved in it. I'm going to briefly touch on it when I talk about it, probably next month. If we talk about it next month, I'll briefly talk about it. But for more on the Janus Directive, and I'll say this again next month, I am going to be doing a fuller scope look at it with my Task Force X podcast. My podcasts aren't quite lined up. I started this one too soon, I guess, to actually have it sync up in time. If I would have remembered that Manhunter was in the crossover, I might have worked out a little bit better. But anyways, coming soon on the Task Force X podcast, I will be covering the Janus Directive. But enough about that. Let's go ahead and continue to talk about this month. Again, it was a good book. I enjoy Manhunter. Not the greatest book out, but I think it was good. Real quick, in the letter column pages, which is called Hunter's Bounty, we get a reader asking for a crossover with the Atom, which I would have loved because I love the Atom. But they tell us there's no plans for Power of the Atom right now, but we'll go and pet that idea in Bill and Roger's mind and see what they think. And that's all I really mean. There's not much else really in here to comment on. There is a comment here about someone, you know, saying that they like Doug Wright's returning to the pages of the Manhunter. Or asking about if Doug Wright's going to return to the pages of the Manhunter. Yeah, let me see what else they talk about here. Oh, the guy's talking about asking where John Ostrander and Rice, Doug Rice from Modern Comics, was doing the adaptation of Voltron. He thought that would have been good for it. And then there's a PS. Since Mark Shaw's turned down Amanda Waller's offer of joining the Suicide Squad at least twice, why not have her try another approach? Have Checkmate make him an offer. He doesn't know what them right. And we get a note here from, I was the editor, from John, saying that he will soon, thanks to the happenings of the Janus Directive. A storyline running through Suicide Squad, Checkmate, Firestorm, Captain Atom, and Manhunter. Look for the Black Border to identify Janus Directive tie-ins. So again, another little plug there for the Janus Directive, which we have coming up next month. And then there's another letter here talking to Ms. Kessel about the Manhunter, about the Hawk and Dove mini limited series. I read that series. I love the mini series and the regular series. And they confirmed me, yes, there's a Hawk and Dove series headed the way, which I enjoyed. Anyway, just nothing else really. And yeah, it looks like Barbara Kiesel was. So the previous note I was talking about, where they were talking about the Janus Directive, was apparently from Barbara Kessel. So, again, that's Manhunter number 13, the first part of our downward angle, I guess. Go ahead and play some promos, and I will be right back with Starman number 10.
We'll return after these messages.
Can I get a tall chai?
And a large black coffee.
And I suppose you're here with no agenda, as per usual?
On the contrary, I'm here for comics.
I think I can help all of you. Hello, I'm the caffeinated Clinton Robison, and I host a podcast called Coffee and Comics. On this podcast, I summarize, review, and discuss comic book issues, stories, and related media, usually in the span of time it takes to have a cup of coffee. Sometimes I'm joined by a guest, and sometimes I'm flying solo. So pour the coffee, take a sip, and turn up the volume as you listen to the Coffee and Comics Podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, and directly on coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com. And remember, this is where the comics are never too old, and the coffee is never too cold.
Hello, I'm Pat Sampson, and I would like to invite you to join me on my podcast, The Long Box Crusade. On this podcast, I'm reading through my 20-plus long boxes that I have stored away in my basement. On each episode, I will select a random issue from my collection and take a very highbrow, thoughtful approach to examining these truly American art forms that help to shape our popular culture.
Oh, I like comics too. Can I get a comic out of my long box that syncs up with the month and year of the comic from your long box and chat about that too? Oh, and video games. Can we talk about games? Or maybe James Bond too. I love James Bond.
Fine. Jared Elbrick, a.k.a. the Yard Sale Artist. We can add some of your comics and enthusiasm to the show. It might help get a deeper introspection of...
Did someone say James Bond? I love James Bond, and I love comics too. I can bring a comic from my long box to sync up with you guys. I also love movies and music, even news stories that tie into the time period that match the comic books we review.
This is what I get for inviting both the Albrecht brothers into my show. Jason, how the heck can we fit all that into my deeply intellectual review of... Well, you know what? Fine. Let's do it. Let's cram it all into one podcast. Join us on the Long Box Crusade, folks. We'll bounce around in time from issue to issue, pulled randomly from my long boxes, and the Albrecht brothers will bring along issues with the same month and year cover date. We'll talk about the comics and the time period they come from, including...
World news of that time.
Top 40 music chart toppers.
Movies, both good and bad. Maybe even some favorite recipes.
Whatever I think is funny.
We'll probably have to suffer through things that Jared thinks are funny.
We'll jam it all into one pop culture extravaganza, examining the comics in my long box and the time period surrounding them. Join us for a wild ride through time on the Long Box Crusade podcast as we attempt to read them all.
What's in your long box?
Attention, attention all personnel. New from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, it's MASHcast. Hosted by MASH megafan Rob Kelly and a rotating cast of VIPs, MASHcast analyzes, episode by episode, the greatest television series of all time, MASH. Find MASHcast on fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Jock Hilaire team! Jock Hilaire!
Check out those great shows. Coffee and Comics blog, Clinton Robinson, the guy that does that's a big supporter of my shows. In fact, I had him on a recent episode of Head Speaks. In fact, I think probably the last episode I played, or I let out. As far as the MASH cast, that's by Rob Kelly from the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I love MASH, and I'm loving Rob's show. It's a great show. And the other show, the Long Box Crusade, I played a promo for. The reason I played that one today, because there's a method to my madness. Today we're talking about Starman number 10. This was the second part of the Batman crossover I talked about last week. Over on episode, I think it was 15 of the Long Box Crusade, actually, Pat had me over there to talk about, Checkmate, issue of Checkmate. I think it was Checkmate 15, part of the Janus Directive, which we're getting to here shortly. I think it starts next month. But what we was doing in that episode, we also talked about Starman number 10. So if you want to hear me and Pat and Jared and his brother Jason and their buddy Delvin talk about this issue also, go over and listen to us over there. We talk about it brief. We don't go as in-depth as I'm going here, but we do briefly talk about it. But enough talking about other people's shows. Let's go ahead and move on to Starman number 10. This was published May of 1989. It was on sale March the 28th of 1989. The cover price was $1. Edited by Robert Greenberger. The title of the story was called A Dark Night in Monument Valley. A 22-page story that was written by, again, Roger Stern. Penciled by Tom Lyle. Inked by Robert Lewis. Letter Robert M. Pignana. Colorist Michelle Wolfman. Is that Michael Wolfman? It's Michael. I'm terrible at names. And the cover is done again by Tom Lyle. The synopsis, again, the synopsis and all the above was once again from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. Great site. Check them out. The synopsis on this one is the police find Starman's apparently lifeless body and work for local EMTs to revive him. They seemingly fail and think the hero is dead. However, Starman recovers. He doesn't have a heartbeat as a result of getting his powers. Once he regains his senses, Starman resumes his pursuit of Blockbuster. On the trail, he meets Batman, who has come from Gotham City to find Roland Desmond. They compare notes, then track down and defeat the new Blockbuster together. Now for my thoughts on it. We start with the cover, because that's where we normally start with. And I'm going to say right off the bat, before I even describe it, I really like this cover. This is a nice cover. The cover, up front, ground, forward, and center, we have... Oh, that came out right. In the very front, we have Will Payton, a.k.a. Starman, fighting with Blockbuster. It's a nice fight scene of the two men, trading blows. Behind them, we got the an Arizona desert scenery, I guess. There's tall rock spires. And on top of one of these rock spires, of course, you had to find a tall place to climb up on to watch. We have Batman with his cape that's twice as long as him, flowing in the breeze. Okay, the cape is a little ridiculously long. That would be my only... And Batman's really undefined. You can tell it's Batman, but you can't really make out his face. Yeah, the cape being 20 feet long is my only real objection to this cover. Everything else, like I said, it is a fantastic cover. It says Dark Knight in Monument Valley. I just love this scene of Will fighting Blockbuster. It's just a great scene. I love it. I'm not an art person. I couldn't tell you anything but artistic about it, other than I think it's a great picture. It's almost poster worthy. That's how good of a cover I think this is. You guys, what do you think? I'll have this on the website, of course. What do you guys think about this cover? Do you guys like it, or am I crazy? Moving on to the story, we start with a dead Will Man. Dead Will Man? A dead Star Man laying. He's got food and stuff dripping on him. Well, he looks dead. He's laying there. There's a hole punched in the wood where his body landed. We get a cop saying he's down. They get a check for a pulse. There's no pulse here. And the cop runs off. One of the cops run off
one of the cops runs off to call the police or ambulance, please. And he's saying, you know, well, Blockbuster did that to him. Could he do someone else? Jeez. And then we get Blockbuster running across the countryside, claiming about a suitcase being left behind. And Blockbuster is kind of a Hulk-type creature. He's a giant creature that pure strength and rage. But unlike the Hulk, for the most part, where the Hulk's just an intelligent brute, if you will, we see here that Mark Desmond still has his mind about it. He can still think. And as Blockbuster's running along, he's sitting there thinking, you know, that is the beat Starman. Ain't nobody gonna give me trouble. Nobody. In that nobody panel, a word balloon is on a panel with the Batmobile streaking down the road with Batman listening to the radio about the trauma team arriving, seeing revived Starman. And Batman's thinking he hasn't had much chance to learn about the new Starman. But he's looking what the Justice League computers have on. And I like this here on page... Oops, went too far. Here on page 3? Yeah, no, page 4. So he's listening to the report on Starman, how he's super strong, super dense. He's got John, he's up there with John's the Martian Manhunter as far as power. And Batman's got a look on his face like, all that power and he was still brought down? The new Blockbuster must be even tougher than his predecessor. This doesn't sound good. And I just love the look on Batman's face there. It's just like, I wouldn't say it's a classic look, but it's a look of almost fear on Batman's face. Because John Jones is up there with Superman as far as toughness goes. So if Starman's being equated with him and Blockbuster took him out, Batman's like, oh, shit. What am I going to do? You don't say that often with Batman, especially as we're getting into the what's often referred to as the Bat God era, where Batman can do almost anything. This is right before that starts. So this shows a little bit of Batman's humanity, I guess, that he's not yet the Bat God. He does have some, can show fear, and he realizes that he can worry about trouble. I mean, he's not going to walk into it. You know, Starman was just taking out, oh, I can do this. He's worried about what's going to happen. And so we get the EMTs trying to revive Will Payton Starman with shock therapy. And so Starman's dead. I'm sitting here laughing. Excited what's going to happen. So the EMTs load Starman up on the stretcher. Like, what does he weigh? They button it up. Yeah, show the man some respect. And we got a news report with his sister Jane crying that she finds out that Starman's dead. She's blaming herself. She's like, well, if I didn't tell him about the news report, he wouldn't have been there. And then Will's friend, Phil Easton, called him up and said he was watching the game with Will. But then Will got called away. What's going on? And Jane's about ready to tell, you know, her brother's friend that he's dead. She's like, Phil, I don't know how to say this, but he's like, yeah! Let's look here on the bottom of page 5. Phil's confused, looking like, what the heck? And we find out that she drops to the knees, you know, she's like praying, oh, thank God he's alive. Oh, thank you, you know. And the news reporter is telling us that he's miraculously regaining consciousness. And then we get the phone laying there on the side. Jane, what's going on? Hello? And the police say, well, we're worried about you. You have a heartbeat. And Will's thinking, yeah, he doesn't have one anymore. He's just a little sore. You know where Blockbuster went to? He's headed north. And Will, again, he's got the living crud beat out of him. And he kind of stumbles, falls in the ambulance, and breaks the door. And one good thing about Will Payton is that even though he may take a beating, they rip his shirt open to do the paddles on him. With his powers, he just made the shirt whole again. I like that. He doesn't have to worry about costumes getting messed up. And so Starman flies off. And he thinks back to how Blockbuster seems to enjoy hurting people. Because Will's kind of worried about everything. I mean, he's like, well, you know, Blockbuster's tough. And is he getting punch drunk? Has he got brain damage from the fight? He's worried about, well, if he does have brain damage, he could be as bad as Blockbuster. Then he said, well, no, Blockbuster seems to enjoy hurting people. So no matter what it means to Will, he's got to find him and stop him. And that's one thing I love about Will Payton. He's a hero through and through. I mean, Blockbuster's gone. It's not his problem anymore. He can fly home and not worry about it. But he knows that if he doesn't do something, there's not too many people in the area that can stand a chance against Blockbuster. So there's no Superman in this area. Superman's on the East Coast. We're all over further to the West. So Will's knows he needs to step up to the bat and do something to stop Blockbuster. And then we get some bar called Cactus Country Store. And they got these guys listening to the radio report about Blockbuster and Starman fighting. And one of the guys like, you believe this stuff? I don't know. It seems I heard Blockbuster died about a year ago, which would have been in the Legends miniseries. And Mark Desmond, as Blockbuster, comes in. That was my baby brother who died. You keep that a secret, won't you? Sure you will. As he grabs two guys and just rams their heads together. I'm assuming killing them. Or a crack. Someone that big and massive that just beat the tar out of Starman, who's super tough, takes two humans and smashes their head together. If this wasn't a code-approved book, I'm sure there'd be more blood and brain bits splattering all over. But so Mark finds some food, starts eating, finds some clothes to wear. And the clothes he can find is a bit too small for him. So he's like, well, I could probably find something better if I was my own size. So he's trying to concentrate and think small and shrink back down to normal. Nothing's happening. Hey, what the is this? I'm still big and ugly. I've done this half a dozen times. Why is it working? I'm not supposed to be stuck that way. That was Mark's problem, not mine. And so he starts freaking out, starts destroying things. And apparently I was wrong about the guys being dead, because one of them, he's not in good shape. He lifts his head up looking as Blockbuster starts tearing the store apart. Great picture. Blockbuster head looks a little odd here, but it's been drawn worse. So it's a good page, though. Don't get me wrong. And then here on page 10 is Will's looking for Blockbuster. He sees someone signaling him, so he lands. And we get here on bottom of page 10, we get a meeting between Starman and Batman. And I'm like, who flashed that light? Oh, I did. What? Holy, you're the Batman. Yes, good to see that you're among the living. What are you doing here? We're after the same man. I might need your help. You might? You know something about this monster? Not as much as I'd like. But I have been able to piece together a few things. And so Batman goes into recapping Desmond's origin. Roland Desmond's origin. I think Roland may have called him Mark, but this is Roland. He's recapping Roland's origin. Talks about his brother was the original Blockbuster. And until a month ago, Roland was doing time in prison back east. And a month ago is when the gene bomb went off at the end of Invasion, which I've talked about for a couple months there. And we find out that we found this out in issue 6. But he's recapping that the gene bomb exposed Roland's metagene, which caused him to become, he could give him seizures, and they were annihilated by certain large doses of certain steroids. But he gained strength, and while being shipped to another prison, he escaped. And so massive doses of these steroids caused him to become Blockbuster. And Will's like, sounds like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Exactly. Unlike his brother, Desmond retains his intellect as a Blockbuster, as we talked about a few minutes ago. And Batman says, and now he's apparently trapped in monstrous form. When he realized that, well, this is the result. One of these men lived long enough to tell me about it. Okay, I missed that. I forgot about that when I first read this a couple days ago. I'm like, well, Batman is a detective and knew all this, but that one guy, apparently he did die, but he lived long enough to hear Desmond, or Roland Desmond's rant about how he's stuck in that form now. He was able to pass that up information on to Batman before he dies. And then we get Will asking Batman, you know, well, what's your connection? Why are you following up on this? And Batman's like, I bet Roland Desmond behind bars. He escaped. I don't allow that. So again, so the two men talk. And luckily for them, some guy comes stumbling along, says it's some brute, some big monster, bear of a man, if you will, came out, threw him out of his bus, and took off in his bus full of kids. And then we cut to Blockbuster driving a bus, again, full of kids. About a dozen kids, apparently. And the teacher come back from field trip. So the kids are talking. They're scared. Roland's like, "Shut up back there, or I'll come back and shut you up permanently." Ah, ha, ha, ha. And so Will lands on top of the bus with Batman falling behind him. And about this time, Blockbuster sees a Batmobile behind him. And as he's distracted, Will grabs the roof of the bus, rips it up, and pulls Blockbuster out. Batman jumps through the... I like to hear this action scene on page 15. It's a comic. It's drawn, so it's not as impressive. It was like a live-action movie or TV show. But Batman drives the Batmobile up beside it and leaps from the Batmobile into the bus to stop the bus safely. And the kids are still scared because this, you know, giant Batman, if you will, jumps into the hole. And we're back... Again, we're in New Mexico, so they don't see Batman like, you know, you do in Gotham and parts east, so they're scared of this giant Batman, if you will, landing in the bus. He's like, "Don't be afraid of me. I won't hurt you. No one will hurt you now. I won't let them." So again, Batman defending the innocent. I love that. That's Batman. So Starman's flying off with Blockbuster. "Pet me down, you freak." "Down? Okay." And so Starman drops Blockbuster here on page 14 from a great height. Or no, I'm sorry. Page 60 from a great height. "No, not from up here." And he crash. "Complaints, complaints. Just be glad you only dropped you 20 feet. And so Blockbuster gets up and he gets ready to throw a rock at him. And he takes a step back. And unfortunately for him, Starman didn't drop him 20 feet to the ground. He dropped him 20 feet onto a pillar of rocks. And so Blockbuster steps off the rock and goes crashing down to the ground. Again, he's not dead yet, but he's knocked for a loop. And he starts getting back up. And I think this is Will comes flying down around. And he's like, "How can he still move after that? This is unreal. Like being stuck in a Chuck Jones cartoon." And for you kids out there who may not know, Chuck Jones did like the Bugs Bunny cartoons from back in the days. Great cartoons, even though a lot of them people don't care for nowadays, show much violence and blah, blah, blah. I turned out perfectly fine. But it had a lot of, you know, the coyote always falling off cliffs and crashing and getting back up. So, kind of what I was referring to. Blockbuster throws a pile of rocks and dirt at Starman, jumps up and grabs him. And as he holds on to Starman, "You want to go for a ride? Let's go. What's the matter, Blockbuster? Or Buster? Afraid of heights?" "I'm not afraid of nothing. Nothing. I survived that fog. I survived anything. You can fly to the moon. I won't let go." Will's like, "The moon's too cold this season. I like it hot." And so he's lighting up, so we can tell he's turning on his heat, which causes Blockbuster to let go, goes flying into another cliff. And Blockbuster talked about last issue when he got that hot trick foot last time. "You've run me twice now. That makes me mad." And Starman's like, "I don't know what to do. All this fighting I've seen is Tyson on the, you know, all about fighting is watching the Tyson fights." And all of a sudden, a bunch of gas starts popping all over the place. And while the gas is floating around, Starman distracts Blockbuster from getting away, beats on him a little bit. And all of a sudden, Desmond falls to the ground here on page 21. And Will's like, "Thank God, that was like punching a stone wall. My hands haven't hurt so much since first grade when I caught them in a car door." And speaking to someone that caught his hand in a car door once when I was, young, less than 10, that hurts like a mofo. That really hurts. So I can emphasize this with Will on this point, because again, I've had my hands in a car door, and yeah, it does hurt. And Will, being the humanitarian, the great guy he is, he lands down, makes sure that Blockbuster is unconscious, but still breathing. Batman and Starman have their little talk here, and Batman tells him that, gives him some sedatives. Let me see what it is here. If you're, yeah, Desmond needs air, where Starman doesn't. Starman's like, what? How'd you know that? It's my business to know such things. Oh, well, I'm glad it's over. Do you have any idea what it's like to fight someone much stronger than you are? Yes. If you're lucky, you don't get used to it. And so he gives him much as sedatives to keep Blockbuster unconscious until the police arrive. And we end with Starman looking at Batman going, yeah, take it easy. That is the toughest man I've ever met. And the Batman's thinking, so that was Starman. Still has a lot to learn. He shows a lot of promise. Hope he can develop it without getting too cynical. The world could use a few more like him. And our story ends with Batman watching Starman fly off in the sunset or the moonrise or whatever it is, holding on to Blockbuster. Another great episode, great issue. I love Starman. He's a great character. I think that Roger Stern did a great job writing him. I love the artwork in here. Overall, it's just a great comic. I love it. And then here in the letter column at the end, they get to talk about next month's issue. And again, and Robert Greenberg is a little plug. Because again, this came out the same month as Manhunter I just talked about. So he gives a little plug about the jazz director over in Suicide Squad and Checkmate. So anyways, another great issue. Definitely, I definitely recommend this issue, this whole book. But enough about that, I guess. Something I haven't done in quite a while because I haven't had any. We're going to move over to the Starman Manhunter mailbag. Before I talk about the email, I do want to mention that over on my website, not my website, the Facebook page, the Starman Manhunter Adventure Facebook page a week ago, I put up a question I asked everybody that was following along. Which costume do you prefer for Starman? The original, what we're looking at now, or the later black costume? I had 14 votes on it. Not as many as I wanted, but better than I expected. And 71% of the people voted for the original, what's I've heard my buddy Shag refer to as the peanut butter and jelly costume. So, out of 14 votes, 71% of you people prefer this costume. I also voted for that one. Great. Thank you guys for the ones that voted. I want to thank you guys for your votes. I want to thank you guys for your opinions. I enjoy hearing what other people think. So what I'm going to do is go through here and thank the people that actually did vote. So for the original people, or the original costume, of course myself, Gord Tolton. Thank you, Gord. You're a big supporter of all my shows. I appreciate you, buddy. Gotham Shuren, another big supporter of my shows. Thank you, Gotham. Keith G. Baker, Derek William Crabb, Thomas Burns, and Sonny Morrison. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank each and every one of you for your votes. And then for the later black costume, we had Mike Hodges, Clinton Robinson, J. David Weider, and Daniel Kozlowski. Clinton's another big supporter of my show. And I know J. David Weider is another podcaster. Mike Hodges, he's a Facebook friend. Thank you guys. Even though you four are wrong, the other 10 are correct. I want to thank you guys very much for voting and for giving your feedback. Though as I'm saying this, I'm actually looking at the post a little bit more. And it says there was 14 votes. There was 10 that voted the original. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's only 7 people showing. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but Facebook's only showing me 7 of the 10 people that voted. So there's 3 other people I didn't thank. I want to thank you guys, too. Stupid Facebook. I'm still trying to figure out how to do some of this stuff. But on this post where I posted about this, we did have a comment from Matthew Bradford that says that these are 2 unsung heroes that he really wishes we could bring back. Really like their series. Perhaps pay them into trade paperback form. Matthew, you are correct, my friend. I agree 110%. We need trade paperbacks. I mean, there's only 24 issues of Manhunter, 30 of Starman, they can fit in a couple of trade paperbacks or an omnibus, I don't know, something. And then our buddy Gord says that it sort of reminds him of the 80s and 90s, how many NHL teams were dropping their distinctive colored sweaters, go to edgy black uniforms and gold trim. They thought it made it look badass, but really just made them look like they all bought from the same traveling salesman. Thanks, Court. I agree with that. I really like that. Also on Facebook recently, I posted an image from Metal Number One. Apparently, their Starman is in this universe. We see a picture of, I forget who this was, someone showing Superman around, the Justice League around, and we see a picture of Starman. They mentioned Starman. So hopefully, as I said here, hopefully Starman will show up. And Frank Bullen does make a comment here that there was a mention on Snyder's Twitter feed that Starman will be in one of the new Justice League books. Like Frank says, I hope so. Frank says he's literally one of his favorite heroes. The Stern and Law Run are amazing. I agree. That's why I'm covering them. Thank you very much for your information, your feedback, Frank. I love that. And again, Frank told me he voted for the original Purple and Gold. And again, just to share a little, because I love origin stories, Frank says he picked up his first issue of Starman, number 4, on a family holiday in 1987 or so. The newsagent was selling bundles of comics and bags. It was all Invasion, First Strike, and Aftermath stuff, Superman, Flash, and some other books. They were hard to get, I guess Frank's in the UK. Starman was the last book he read as he had heard of that character. He was blown away by Lyle's pencils, fan for life. And he feels that the book went downhill after Lyle left. Again, as I told him in the comment, I don't know if it went, I don't think it might have been quite as good, but I don't know if it went downhill. But again, we'll have to wait and see. And then he posted Snyder's comment where he says that there's plans for Will in the future, hopefully. So, again, as I told Frank, here's hoping. And I haven't gotten any emails. There's other comments to make. So I am going to read off a couple of the likes that I received over on the Facebook page. We have Thomas J. Burns, Emmanuel Souza, Jason Simpson, Nathaniel Adam, Edmund Vitale, Clinton Robinson, Mike Zacker, Pat Sampson, John Mouser, Vince Austin, Matthew Canzanza, sorry if I messed that up, John Stahl, Thomason Mikioko, James Howlett, that's Wolverine, Josh Alexander, R. Robbie Williams, Ryan Wing, Stephen Barbato, Stephen Luke, Wolfman Cap, that's a buddy of mine from Facebook, hey Wolfman, Grant Richter, Courtney White, Dean Oshekis, Justin LaFleur, Josh Jose Riviera, Nick Martelli, Grant Richter. I may have repeated some of those names. And you know what I'm doing? I'm just looking back over the last year because, again, I haven't done this in a while. I've had regular episodes in a while. And Brian Morris. And I'm going to go ahead and stop there. If I missed any, I'm sorry. I apologize. I need to be more regular on this, but I haven't gotten very many comments or emails or anything. So I tend to forget to do this sometimes. But that's going to be it for this episode. I want to thank everyone that's written in. I want to thank everybody that voted on the Facebook page. Definitely check us out. Be here next month. I'm just looking at my schedule when I look at Starman 11 and Manhunter 14, and I will recap the Janus Directive. Also, check out my other shows, Head Speaks, where I'm currently in the middle of the Armageddon 2001 crossover, G.I. Joe, A Real American Headcast, where I look at the G.I. Joe comic and the cartoon. I'm up to issue, I'm working on episode 20, looking at issue 20 of the series. And then my Task Force X podcast, where I look at the Task Force X, the Suicide Squad, and Checkmate. And I will be starting the Janus Directive over there. Looks like episode 37 is what my plan is right now. And I'm working on episode 35. So just a couple more months and I'll be on the Janus Directive. Yeah, there's no way to really tie these two together at this point because I'm a couple months ahead at this point on this show. But definitely check them out. I think they're great shows. Check out the promos I played for those shows. Great guys. But for now, this is where I'm going to leave it off. We're over a little over an hour. I'm doing pretty good on keeping this as the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. All right, guys. Thanks a lot, everybody. And as I say at the end of every episode, Star Hunters, keep looking towards the stars.
thank you for listening to another great episode of the Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour. Please join us next month for another great, fantastic episode as we cover another issue of the Will Payton Starman series and the Mark Shaw Manhunter series. Keep in mind that these podcasts are not affiliated or endorsed by DC Comics. I'm just a fanboy who loves these comics and wants to spread these love with everyone else out there and just talk about them. Again, you can email us at smah@headspeaks.com. And you can go to our blog, which is at starman-manhunter.headspeaks.com. You can also go to the Facebook page at facebook.com/StarmanManhunterAdventureHour. No spaces, all one word. But once again, thank you very much for joining us. Until next episode, this is Aaron Moss saying, see you in the funny pages.
There's an old Australian stockman lying, dying. And he gets himself up onto one elbow and he turns to his mates who are gathered round and he says, watch me wallabies feed, mate. Watch me wallabies feed. They're a dangerous breed, mate. So watch me wallabies feed all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Keep me cockatoo cool, curl. Keep me cockatoo cool. Oh, don't go acting the fool, curl. Just keep me cockatoo cool all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. And take me koala back, Jack. Take me koala back. He lives somewhere out on the track, Mac. So take me koala back all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Let me abos go loose, Lou. Let me abos go loose. They're of no further use, Lou. So let me abos go loose all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. And mind me platypus duck, Bill. Mind me platypus duck. Oh, don't let him go running amok, Bill. Just mind me platypus duck all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Play your didgeridoo, Blue. Play your didgeridoo. Like, keep playing till I shoot through, Blue. Play your didgeridoo. All together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tan me hide when I'm dead, Fred. Tan me hide when I'm dead. So we tanned his hide when he died, Clyde. And that's it hanging on the shed all together now. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.